This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
For this month's JodBytes, I'm with Eddie Blackhurst, who's a radio engineer, and I'm actually out at Jodrell Bank in one of the clean rooms, which I have to say I've never been in before. But a lot of rather special stuff goes on in here, doesn't it, Eddie?
Yes, hi Mark. A lot of people probably won't know this, but the room that we're in now, just a few years ago, we built a suite of low-noise amplifiers used for a satellite called Planck. And it's comprised of some of the lowest noise amplifiers that have ever been produced, and is taking some of the finest radio astronomy data at the frequencies that it's designed to work at that have ever been taken.
And the bits were made here?
Were all made here, yeah, on site here at Jodrell Bank. The bodies that the amplifiers were made out of were machined in a mechanical workshop based here, and I did all of the assembly of the amplifiers. I did the RF testing, the radio testing, tuning and characterization. The amazing part about these amplifiers is that they're designed to work at 20 Kelvin, so some minus 250 degrees centigrade, and they're actually running at those temperatures out in space. The most important thing about radio astronomy receivers is to keep the noise temperature of the receiver as low as possible, because some of the signals that we're trying to detect effectively are so weak that background noise generated within the receiver itself would swamp those signals out effectively. So the way we do that is physically cooling down the amplifiers in what's known as a dewar, which is effectively like a super fridge, if you like. Actually, producing an amplifier that works at room temperatures, not really that difficult. But to actually get one to work at 20 Kelvin is extremely difficult, because the device parameters, the transistor parameters, change as you cool, and performance characteristics of other components vary as well. When you get an amplifier that's not working properly when it's physically cooled, you then have to come up with a hypothesis as to how to repair it, alter it at room temperature, and then try and cool it again. But the other thing with Planck was everything had to be of a flight grade effectively, so all of the components had to come with qualification. They had to all be certified suitable for flight use. We had to have very well defined procedures to do assembly, and everything, even the thermal characteristics of the room that we did the assembly in here in the clean room, all had to be fully documented. So it was no mean feat, and testament to the skill of the staff here at Jodrell and at other establishments that were also involved with Planck, is the Planck satellite has now been running for several years and is taking really good data.
Presumably everything had to be small. I mean, I noticed we've got a microscope here, and if you're launching something into space, it's got to be as light as possible, I guess, that consideration as well.
Yes, absolutely. The components that we use are absolutely minute. When I mention a transistor, everyone thinks of a device that's quite large that you can pick up with your fingers and move about. But to us, a microwave transistor measures less than half a millimetre across. You're looking at a device which is about 0.4 millimetres wide, and I have to put gold wires onto these transistors, bond wires we call them, which affect the tuning of the amplifier, and they are actually finer than a strand of human hair, and those are all put on by hand.
Oh wow.
Hence the need for the microscope.
Yes, and a steady hand.
A very, very steady hand. You can't have a bad day when you're putting wires onto these transistors. You've got to be really relaxed and really calm. One of the things that we did to keep the weight down of Planck was we machined the amplifier bodies out of aluminium to keep the overall weight down. Typically, we like to use brass because it's easier to machine and it handles quite nicely. We're now currently building a suite of amplifiers, or completing a suite of amplifiers for eMerlin, which are working at C-band. For those who don't know what C-band is, it's 4 to 8 gigahertz.
And that's quite high then for ground-based radio observations.
It's fairly high, but it works well with the eMerlin network. Methanol is the thing that's observed.
So then the eMerlin network is the network of telescopes operated from Jodrell Bank, which now It's E because of the optical fibres connecting them. So obviously the improvements are still continuing with the production of these new amplifiers.
Yes, yeah. We're making refinements all the time to try and improve things. But we're getting some very, very good performance. And just shortly from now, I'll fit one of these amplifiers into the test duo that I've located next door in our RF test facility. And overnight tonight, we'll get that cold and get it down to 20 Kelvin physical and test the noise properties.
Right. Well, maybe we should go in there and have a look at how you actually cool these things down.
Yeah, no problem. Let's have a go.
Okay, so now we're here, we're about to cool one of the amplifiers down. I'm sort of looking at a silvery box. It's about maybe 40 centimetres each side. And then inside it, there's one of the amplifiers, sort of gold brick, a few centimetres across. And it's attached to some wires. So how are we going to cool that down now?
Yes, we've just put one of the amplifiers that we were looking at in the clean room a few minutes ago into our test chamber or test duo. The amplifier's bolted to a metal plate within the duo, and that plate is actually cooled down to 20 Kelvin physical. You can see a variety of different cables inside the duo. We've got bias cable, which is taking the voltages and current required by the amplifier to bias it. We also have RF connectors, which allow us to test the amplifier's RF performance. And the actual duo itself, the way it works is really quite nice. It's effectively like your domestic flask that you would have your coffee in, effectively, but it's coupled with a chiller or a cooling system. So what we do is we feed helium into a thing called a displacer, which is bolted to the bottom of the cryostat, the duo. So we feed gaseous helium in at about 300 pounds per square inch. Within this displacer, we have a piston, which is driven by a motor. And the piston allows the gas in at about 300 pounds per square inch. And as the piston moves up, it reduces that pressure down to about 60 pounds per square inch and returns it to the compressor to be recompressed. And it's that expansion of gas that is used to cool the amplifier down to 20 Kelvin physical.
It's like spraying an aerosol then. It suddenly you expand the volume and it gets colder.
That's pretty much identical to how it works. Another thing that we have to do, though, the inside of the duo has to have all of the air pumped out. And the reason for this is air is quite a good conductor of heat. So if we have any air effectively left in the duo, it will conduct heat into the amplifier from the outside world, and we won't be able to get the device as cold as we want to. The other problem, if we have any air left in the duo, is we will end up with dew initially coating the amplifier as it gets cold, and at some point this will actually freeze, which we don't want, obviously, because if we've got dew on the outside of the amplifier, we have it on the inside, and that could cause damage. So we have to pump the air out as well. This actual duo, out of interest, is the actual duo that we use to test all of the Planck flight amplifiers. Wow. So it's done some sterling work in the past, and it's still continuing to do so now.
So right now we've got an amplifier for E-Merlin hooked up to it, but just outside of the duo you've got one of the actual Planck prototype amplifiers, is it?
Yes.
We'll try and describe what it is. I mean, it's a lot lighter, as you were saying, than one of the E-Merlin amplifiers, because it had to be to get on the spacecraft. And you're saying it's made of aluminium, it's sort of gold coloured. It looks to me a bit like a big Lego brick. It's got some wires sticking out and a bit of circuitry in it. So if we imagine that's going up in the Planck spacecraft, and what they're doing there is observing the cosmic microwave background, and then this has got to amplify those very, very weak signals. How is it so small? It's so compact.
Well, obviously, for the flight hardware, we had to manufacture things as compact as possible, because not only is mass an issue, but also size is an issue as well. I mean, the weight of this thing must only weigh 100 grams, or certainly not much more than that, I wouldn't have thought. The thing I always find amazing is the all-up weight of the Ariane 5 that carried Planck weighed some 770 tons at launch. And you look at this amplifier and you think, there's no weight there at all.
There's so much fuel they have to carry in there, so you've got to keep the actual useful components down to as lighter weight as possible.
Yeah, it keeps launch costs down. But interestingly, we're testing an eMerlin amplifier in this Dewar, and that's designed to work from 4 to 8 gigahertz in the C-band. Now, this Planck amplifier here, this pre-production prototype, effectively, is designed to work at 44 gigahertz, which is quite substantially higher in frequency. The actual, if you compare both amplifiers side by side, there's quite a difference in their internal architecture. For example, the circuit boards that carry the microwaves in the Planck amplifier are fitted into channels which are, well, 30,000ths of an inch wide, you know, and all those circuit boards are made by hand, so a very steady hand came in.
Yeah.
By comparison, the C-band amplifier that we're about to test, the channel which the circuit boards carrying the microwaves in there, the width of the channel that the circuit boards sit in, is probably on the order of getting on towards a centimetre wide. So there's quite a substantial difference in the way they're assembled and the way they're designed, effectively.
Yeah. I should also mention one of the things that you just showed me as we left the workshop was one of the strands of gold that you used to coat the wires. And it was like a little strand of gold hair, very, very fine sort of gold hair.
That's one of the bond wires, is it? Those are actually, the wires that we use are 0.7 thousandths of an inch in diameter, which is actually finer than human hair. But for Planck, the transistors used in the amplifiers there have pads on them which are so small that even those wires were too thick. So we had to use 0.5 thousandths of an inch diameter wire, which is incredibly difficult to work with.
I just think one of the most nerve-wracking things about this must be that, at least with the eMerlin amplifiers, you've got the luxury of being able to take them back out and fix them if they're broken. But these Planck ones, I mean, you never get to touch them again. They've got to work.
It was suggested by one of my superiors that if anything went wrong, I would be issued with a one-way ticket on an Ariane 5. But we won't go any further on that one.
Well, it all seems to be really successful. And actually, it's a really exciting thing to be involved in because ultimately, it's going to give a better constraint on the variations in the cosmic microwave background. It's going to help people to understand the history of the universe, how much dark energy there might be, all that sort of thing. And these amplifiers are at the heart of it.
I can't wait to see some of those papers, to be quite honest. I mean, the whole team, not just myself, put a considerable amount of effort in. And I think, and I hope, we will be rewarded by some really good data. I look forward to seeing the papers.
Okay, well, maybe for the last thing, I understand this is going to be quite noisy. Should we fire up the cryostat?
Yeah, sure, no problem.
All right, so we're ready to switch on. Let's hear what it sounds like.
Yeah, you ready? I'll just switch the vacuum pump on to take the air out, so you'll hear that starting to run. Here we go. There we go. So the vacuum in the Dewar chamber now is reducing as the air's been sucked out.
Uh-huh.
And the next thing to do now is to turn on the cryogenic pump, or the displacer in this case. So just connect that and you should hear the chugging sound as the helium's been allowed in.
Oh yeah.
So the chamber, you can hear it.
It's quite a funky rhythm.
Expanding the helium. Yeah. Very therapeutic. So not good to listen to for too long, and you tend to go very sleepy with it. But there we go.
So you hear it winding up now.
You can hear the turbo pump winding up now. That'll drop the vacuum, drop the pressure in the chamber right down, and you know, produce a very good vacuum. And you can see here on this temperature monitor unit that the temperature is starting to go down slowly.
Oh, yeah, there it goes. So we've got it there in Kelvin.
Yes, yeah.
So it's about room temperature at the moment. How long does it take to get right down to 20 Kelvin or so?
This Dewar, you're looking at probably, I don't know, 6 to 8 hours to get it down to 20 Kelvin physical.
Okay.
So it's not too bad. And once it gets that cold, we can switch the vacuum pump off, close the tap effectively on the Dewar to prevent air getting back in. We can switch a vacuum pump off then, and it will maintain its vacuum because of its physical temperature.
And then by minimising the temperature, that reduces the thermal noise as much as you can then.
Yes, it reduces the thermal noise of the amplifier to an absolute minimum. Thermal noise is also known as Johnson noise. And we measure that with this rack of test equipment just immediately in front of you, which is the same test set that we used for doing Planck on.
Right, so all those Planck amplifiers have been tested on this equipment.
Yes.
And now they're doing their job out in space.
Yes, yeah. And the test set's still doing a good job for E-Merlin.
Yes, very, very exciting to think that all the equipment that's now going to be used by Planck to get better constraints on the history of the universe and the content of the universe was all tested here. That's really fantastic to see. Thanks very much for the interview.